coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Show. I am your man, Dan Flynn. This week, Dix is unavailable, so Inside Lacrosse editor-in-chief, prolific podcaster, especially today, and all-around great guy, Matt Kinnear, is going to join me and give his insight into all the weekly happenings in Division I men's lacrosse. Matty K, let's get it.
I just hope I can fill Dixon's esteemed shoes with what I have to say here.
They're small shoes. They're
so,
small
shoes. Me too.
So. He's a big man, but small shoes. All right, Matt. So Dixie is out this week. He is traveling for his other job. He works for a pharmaceutical company, and he has, I guess, annual meetings or something. And he's pretty much tied up Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. So we're
lack of priorities is really what you're saying.
So he just is unavailable. So Matt was gracious enough to sit in. Really, no one knows what's really going on in the lacrosse world more so than our editor-in-chief, Matt Kinnear. So you guys are in for a real treat. Plus, Dix will call in, though. He will call in. He gives us his usual Tuesday takeaways. We will talk about those when we get to those games. So, Matt, where were you last week? We know we talked about where Dixie is. What games did you see last week, and what are you up to this week?
You know, it was another busy weekend like they always are during the season. Friday, got home for happy hour lacrosse, as Quint keeps telling us, and watched North Carolina Hopkins while playing with my son on Friday night and making dinner and stuff like that. Saturday, I took a trip to Gettysburg to catch Gettysburg versus Salisbury in a great D3 matchup.
Oh, OT win for the Berg.
OT for the Bullets. It was it was a wild game, probably wilder than anything that happened in Division I landscape. But you know, pumped to be talking about these games. I've been watching as much as I can from this past weekend's highlights and you know, reading with Quint stuff, and ready to rock here.
All right. So here's what we'll do. First game we're going to look at in Dixon's takeaway is Duke, former number one team, is upset by the Penn Quakers at Franklin Field 10-9. And here's Dixie's takeaway.
Hey there, Dan Flynn and Matt Kinnear sitting in riding shotgun this week. Mark Dixon here of the Dixie D-Fly podcast. I am on assignment, but calling in to give you my thoughts on a couple of games. We'll start off with Duke and Penn, the biggest upset, really, of the season thus far. And I think the first takeaway is it just proves that Uncle February is still crazy as ever. A game that, really, when you look at the last few years, Duke tends to lose some games in February. Penn has had some luck against the Blue Devils in this month. But when you consider Duke coming off the huge come-from-behind win against Denver, and then Penn getting shellacked in a midweek game against Maryland, saw them down at half 9-2 when they lose to the Terps 13-6, you just kind of thought that these teams were taking divergent paths. But that's why you take every game, especially the early games in the early month of February, game by game, week by week, day by day, whatever you want to call it. But some takeaways here: impressed with Reed Junkin, the goaltender for Penn. I thought he was solid throughout. Penn turned a distinct face-off advantage into a very much of a positive, winning 15 out of 22, 6 out of 8 in the fourth period. And the Penn defense, what else can you say about this team? But great job holding Duke scoreless. When the Blue Devils took a 9-6 lead with 9:53 left in the game, they didn't score again. And really, they didn't have the ball a whole lot. And credit Penn for not turning the ball over, taking care of it, having good possessions, getting good shots. Kevin McGeary completed the comeback and the win, scoring the game winner with 3 minutes left. So McGeary is the hero. But you really, when you look at this game was fundamentally sound for the Penn Quakers, and that's how they got the job done. They stayed within themselves. They didn't get too emotional or excited. They took care of the ball, and they get out of this a huge win over the number one team in the country. Several people that I've spoken with over the last 24 hours are just shocked that Penn won this game, because Duke has looked so good in this early season. And remember, this is a Duke team that was down to Denver 12-8 going into the fourth quarter, scored 7 straight goals and went 15-12. And a lot of that was due to defensive pressure, forcing some turnovers and creating mayhem in the middle of the field. Penn handled the Duke pressure, gets away with a huge win. Hats off to the Quakers. But again, really, really young season. Uncle February only has a couple of days left, but he's as crazy as ever. And who knows what this might be a harbinger for the rest of the season.
So, Matt, that's Dixie's takeaway. What do you have to add about this one?
Well, first, is this the D-Fly Dixie show or the Dixie D-Fly show? I'm not quite sure about that. I keep getting conflicting info.
Are you surprised that he doesn't know or that he inadvertently puts his name first?
Inadvertently puts his name first. My takeaway is I just wanted to let everyone know that I got this one completely wrong.
What do you mean?
I thought Duke was going to roll in this game, you know, and I know Quinn has been a strong proponent of Penn and what they can do this year. And, you know, Penn is a really talented team, but I just thought Duke was head and shoulders better than them. And I'm flat out wrong on this one. Penn as a team, though, is I'm not sure if they can string together games like this all season. And we saw that against Maryland just a few days ago. You know, I think that was probably a wake-up call for them that maybe that's going to pay dividends down the road. But I'd like to see if Penn can just have some consistency and build on this win and have a strong Ivy League showing. You know, Reed Junkin, Mark mentioned him in the beginning, but I think he was totally the difference maker. He's definitely a game changer, and he's going to be a guy that I think can steal some games for them throughout the season. Right now, I still think, despite what, you know, their kind of close call against Michigan this week, I think Yale is the top team in the Ivy League when it comes to a full season's work, but encouraged to see if Penn can prove me wrong and kind of put together just a consistently great season here.
Yeah, what I was surprised about is it was Duke's first road game. They've been averaging about 17.5 goals per game, and Penn holds them to 9 goals. Like, that's kind of shocking to me. With their athleticism, I didn't think that Penn could keep up with them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can't score if you don't have the ball. And is that face-off disparity going to be something that kills Duke this season? You know, I think we all have the thought that this can be a team that wins the national championship. They're preseason number one. Of course, you have to think that it's a possibility. But our face-offs just too strong of an Achilles heel for this Duke team to go far in May.
We'll have to just blame this one on Uncle February. All right, let's move on from that one. Another exciting game that I got to catch a good bit of this one on Saturday. Number 6 Virginia with an 18-15 win over number 18 Princeton in a game where the two teams haven't met for a long time. And it renewed a rivalry. Ian Laviano, 5 goals, 2 assists. Michael Krause with 4 goals and 3 assists to lead undefeated UVA, who continues their climb up the rankings. Dix, what was your takeaway?
Princeton and Virginia. Wow, what a great game. The first time these two teams have tangled in the regular season since 2008. And the 2018 edition saw Virginia slug it out with the Tigers, winning 18-15, a far cry from the last time they met, which was 2012, NCAA Division I first round game won by Virginia 6-5. So a lot more scoring in this game, and it's all about opportunity. This game was 10-10 at half, with each team scoring 6 goals in the first quarter, 4 goals in the second, and it was early third quarter when the critical play came when Princeton had a man up. Virginia got a stop, and freshman goalie Alex Rohde threw a long pass, and it was converted on the other end by Michael Krause of Virginia. And that was the kind of the momentum swing that Virginia needed. It started a 3-goal run, gave them a 3-goal cushion at 13-10, and that ended up being the final score of the contest. It's uncanny when you look at the box score. 10-10 at half, then that 3-goal run was the difference in the game as Virginia outscored Princeton 5-2 in the third stanza. In the fourth quarter, each team scored 3 goals apiece. So it's oftentimes about momentum. And how about Alex Rohde, the new starting goaltender for Virginia, getting his first career start? Wasn't sterling, but it's not about when you make how many saves you make. It's when you make the saves and what kind of plays can you make. So 10 saves altogether for Rohde. He allowed 15 goals, but that play early in the third quarter was critical and a real big boy play for a freshman making his first career start in such a high scoring game when one team, who was going to blink first, what team was going to make their own breaks. And it was Virginia being man down, Rohde with a beautiful pass and a finish on the other end. And that proved to be the difference, sparking a 3-goal run for Virginia, but really an entertaining lacrosse game, and really glad to see these two teams back playing again.
So, Matt, you also watched this game. What were some of your thoughts on the Princeton-Virginia game?
Yeah, myself, Terry Foy and Dan Abern were watching this in the office this morning, and You know, obviously, Virginia, you know, 4-0 moving up the polls, like you said, and that's a strength of what they've accomplished this year, beating a good Loyola team, and then this Princeton team that I think is very good. I think Princeton is deeper than people think. You know, I think that they have the talent to replace guys like Gavin McBride that people thought might not have been replaceable. So I think they're going to surprise some people throughout this year. You know, they've got a lot of freshmen who can score a lot of points. Their defense is obviously a question mark. Giving up 18 goals, obviously it's Virginia. Virginia can score goals at will pretty much. But anytime you give up 18 goals, that's concerning. Virginia, though, my concern with them going forward is, are they playing their top guys way too much, especially the way that they play? You know, is this first midfield going to be able to sustain an entire season of this kind of, you know, up and down play that they have? They're athletes. They're super athletes. So, you know, physically, if there's anyone can do it, it's these guys that they have, you know, the Docs Aikens and the Matt Moores and these guys. But they're playing a lot of minutes. They're playing a lot of tough minutes. I'm worried that when it comes to ACC play, Virginia is just going to flame out again because of the way that they play all these guys. They got to develop some of these other scoring options here.
Where it really affects you is when you have back-to-back games like the ACC tournament, or if you can make it as far as Final Four weekend, or even if you may have to, it is just a quick turnaround games is when it's going to be, you know, a midweek game followed by a weekend game in the middle of the season or something is where it could be really affecting them.
Yeah, so, you know, that's obviously going to be something we're going to have to keep an eye on throughout the year, but, you know, it's as big of a game as it gets this coming weekend. It's a game that I'm going to be going to. Myself and Dan Aber are going to take a trip down to Charlottesville for their big tilt on Sunday afternoon against the Syracuse Orange. And, you know, Dan, I know you have a strong opinion about how this game is going to unfold.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about it as we get into the games to watch. But Syracuse coming off an emotional win, 3 overtimes over Army West Point, a huge win for Syracuse in a stunning fashion. A long play, I think Dixie called it, he reminded him of Donovan McNabb to Marvin Harrison when he remarked about the game. But another game that we want to look at from last week, and you mentioned a happy hour lacrosse, is Carolina came up to Homewood Field and defeated the Blue Jays 13-11. Timmy Kelly had 4 goals, 3 of those during a crucial fourth quarter run for North Carolina where they came back to take the lead. He was playing wearing number 18, which is a good story. That was Dave Huntley's number. All-American midfielder for Johns Hopkins, who also was a mentor to him in his days at Calvert Hall. Emotional thing for Timmy Kelly, especially to do that against Hopkins on Homewood Field. And just all the mistakes that the Blue Jays made throughout the game. Let's get Dixie's takeaway on that one.
In a game that Dan and I spoke about at length last week, North Carolina Johns Hopkins, Dan called it desperation. I walked that back a little bit and said, no, I find it more to be about urgency. And it sure was, as both these teams really got after it this past Friday night at Homewood Field. And Hopkins came out with urgency. They took a 2-0 lead less than 90 seconds into the game and looked to be off on the right foot. But this game was defined by Hopkins' miscues and then the opportunistic Tar Heels taking advantage of those. And that's what teams have to do in order to win games at the Division I level, really at any level, but especially Division I lacrosse. But, you know, I think the first mistake by Hopkins was trying to short stick Tanner Cook, the mammoth right-handed point producer that Carolina has. The Canadian scored 4 goals all in the first half, 2 of which were unassisted. I think after he burned your guy the first time for a goal, you switched that matchup. But Hopkins stuck with a shorty matchup, and they paid for it big time as Cook scored 4 goals in the first half. I thought they made some nice defensive adjustments in the second half, but by that time, Cook had done his damage and gotten Carolina back in the game. If you're going to short anybody on that Carolina offense, I think you go with Andy Matthews and make him beat you one-on-one. But two other instances where this game really turned, Cole Williams, who had a terrific first half for Johns Hopkins, scores his 3rd goal, makes it 6-5 Hopkins, and inexplicably just flicks his stick up in the air and earns an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. So instead of it being 6-5 Hopkins were facing off, now it's 6-5 Hopkins, man down, no face-off because it was a dead ball foul, and Carolina came back and scored shortly thereafter. Tim Kelly taking Andy Matthews' feed to make it 6-6. And then we move into the third quarter the fourth period, where it's 9-9 score after an unassisted Andy Matthews goal. Hopkins earns a shot clock, and with 1 second left in the shot clock, they commit a penalty, a guillotine check, earns a hold, and then a short time after that, Tim Kelly again scores. So instead of it being 9-9, you get a huge defensive stop, you're going the other way, now you're man down, you give up a man-up goal against Carolina, and what was a 9-8 lead after a Patrick Frazier goal at the beginning of the fourth quarter, Andy Matthews' goal, and then the Tim Kelly EMO goal because of the hold with 1 second left on the shot clock, you see that score go up from 9-9 to 12-9 when it was all said and done. The Matthews goal started a four-goal run. That run could have been broken had Hopkins got that defensive stop, gotten the ball back, got it down to the offensive end, get some momentum back, but miscues just really killed Hopkins, and hats off to Carolina for taking advantage of those mistakes as that proved to be the difference in this game.
Yeah, Dixon started this talking about, you know, is it desperation time at Johns Hopkins? And I don't think it was heading into this past game, but now that the result was what it was, I think it is desperation time, and they need to beat Princeton. If you read, whether it's a perception thing or what, you know, obviously Johns Hopkins has the talent to go neck and neck with anyone in the country. It's just a matter of something is not working right now, and they're not executing. Mike Preston in the Baltimore Sun, someone who's highly respected and knows the sport, you know, he had a column that says Johns Hopkins is in trouble after 13-11 loss to North Carolina. I agree with that. You saw this game, you know, North Carolina was also a team looking for its identity, looking for something to prove heading into this game. And they kind of showed a toughness and a poise that Johns Hopkins lacked. The lack of discipline in this game was pretty alarming. You know, Mark talked about the shot clock violation that never was because they got the penalty with 1 second left in there. Yeah. The
Cole Williams,
the celebration. You know, these are mistakes that you can't make when you're a team that's kind of searching for it. And right now they're still in that searching for what is the identity of Johns Hopkins. And they got a chance to, you know, to play a very good Princeton team and forge that identity, but they got to execute on game day.
Yeah, and they have a lot to look forward to in that game. They got whooped by Princeton last year, so there should be a lot of motivation there.
Yeah, if you can't get up for this game against a team that embarrassed you last year and off of a performance that you know you left some stuff out on the field against this North Carolina squad, then I don't know what will get you motivated.
All right, Matt, I want to get your opinion on a couple other games before we move on. One game in particular was maybe the next biggest upset of the weekend besides Duke and Penn. Just across the state, Penn State loses to Robert Morris, 12-9. A big fourth quarter. Robert Morris scores, you know, outscores them 6-2 in the fourth quarter, knocks off Penn State. Their goalie had a great game. Alex Hager, 14 saves, and Jimmy Perkins had 3 goals and 3 assists for Robert Morris. You have been up to Penn State College this year to watch the team in action. What's going on up there?
Well, Robert Morris is a team that's very good in transition. And Penn State, I don't think their defense can handle, you know, just a transition offense that comes at them like that. You know, Penn State has a lot of returning experience on this defense, but it was a defense that was much maligned a lot of last year as well. So I just don't think they've cleaned things up enough to really handle a team that throws some unique offensive, you know, transition things at you. And Robert Morris's credit, 9 different players scored in that game. Jimmy Perkins, you know, had the big game with the 3 goals and 3 assists. But, you know, that shows me something, that it's not just a one-on-one breakdown that Penn State was suffering. It was kind of Robert Morris was able to pick apart this team defense of Penn State. And, you know, I think that Penn State's got some thinking to do as well, just like we talked about Johns Hopkins. And, you know, it's funny talking about things like SOS and RPI in February.
You mean strength of schedule?
Yeah, strength of schedule. Not SOS as in save our season.
Yeah.
But Penn State, they're not putting together a great resume right now when you look at, you know, their non-conference things that they have. And it's affecting, you know, a team like Villanova that beat them. This Penn State win isn't that big for Villanova anymore, because obviously they're going to be saved by their Big Ten schedule. Yeah. But if they keep dropping these out of conference games, and if the Big Ten is not as strong overall as it has been, clearly it's not going to be as strong as it was last year, because last year was really special. You know, this isn't going to be as great of a win for the Wildcats as it once was. So Penn State, I'm eager to see what they do to turn this around, but I think they have some questions on defense.
Well, let's stay right with the Big East, and another big win for the Georgetown Hoyas. They get a 12-10 win over previously number 19 Towson Tigers at Johnny Unitas Stadium in a back-and-forth game. It was tied entering the fourth quarter, and the Hoyas take a 3-1 edge in the fourth quarter and win the game by 2 goals. They're 3-0 for the first time in a long time. I think I heard Zach Babbo say since 2003, which seems hard to believe that Georgetown is off to their best start in 15 years. Dan Beccaro leads the Hoyas with 4 goals and 2 assists. Big East.
Big East is looking good. And Georgetown, congrats to Coach Kevin Warren for the start that they've had to this season. You know, I think he's one of the guys in the sport that I, you know, really like as a person. And, you know, he's had to deal with the culture issues at Georgetown and had to change things there. And it's starting to pay off now. I think you're starting to see the dividends from some rough years and some hard work that he's put in. This senior class, you know, Craig Burge is the guy who was the star this weekend. But this senior class, I think, represents, you know, the new Georgetown here. You know,
how long has Warren been there?
He's going on 5 years now.
Okay.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong for that one. But, you know, it takes a while to do this. You know, it's not an overnight process. You know, I remember at the NCAA Final Four a few years ago when it was Brown versus Navy and Lars Tiffany getting up to the mic and talking about Coach Rick Soule, about how this is the reason why you need to give these coaches a few years, you know, to turn over the program, to get their guys in, to make any cultural adjustments that you need to make. You know, Navy did it in the form of making the NCAA Final Four. I'm sorry, quarterfinals, not Final Four. And, you know, Georgetown, we're starting to see the seeds of that kind of come to fruition here. So congrats, Kevin Warren. But like you said, the Big East is looking really, really good this year. Georgetown is better. Marquette, you know, I actually just recently spent a few days with the Marquette program. We can talk more about that at another time, but they have some questions on their offense, no doubt, but, you know, they're still winning their games, and they're going to be a team that is going to give a lot of teams a lot of trouble. You know, I think they're going to have a good game against Ohio State this coming weekend. Villanova has been phenomenal. We've talked about them quite a few times, and this weekend show me that they can win defensively, not just on the backs of their high-powered offense. Providence is a team that's been on the rise and continues to do so. And St. John's is, I've had multiple coaches tell me how much better St. John's is this year, starting in the preseason. This wasn't just because they've started to get a few wins. So top to bottom, this is a better conference. And we're not even mentioning Denver. You know, it's
yeah.
The team that the team to beat there, but there's not a safe game in Big East play. So I think you're really seeing a strong conference and a strong start to their year in Big East.
You know what is a safe bet, though?
What's that?
Trimena.
Absolutely.
After, during, or even before a workout, Matt. Did you get any of it when it was in the office? We had a case or two shipped here from our friends at Trimena, and it went fast.
It was. I had one. It was here very briefly because it was so good, and by the time I wanted to get my second, it was all gone.
Trimena is protein-infused water. Well, there's 28 calories. It has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories, as I said. It's ideal before, during, or after your workout, and it tastes great. Comes in 7 delicious flavors, including 3 new ones, citrus, orchard, and raspberry limeade. Now, it's hard to believe that it's water because it tastes so good. It really is delicious.
It is phenomenal, and that's not just an ad read here. That's the truth. This
it really is
really good. Go
it,
to Amazon right now.
It tastes good. You can get it at Amazon, or you can go to CVS and buy some. Trimena increases energy and endurance and even curbs your appetite so you can play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good. Okay, Matt, this is a segment where we unveil the latest Maverick Media Poll, our Maverick Media Poll here. This has been a shakeup in the top 10. For the first time this season, we have a new number one team. And for the first time in that school's history, they appear as the number one team in the media poll. And those are the Albany Great Danes.
The most exciting team is now the top-ranked team.
Yeah. The Dane Train is very popular in our office these days because of how much fun they are to watch. So what I'll do is I'll read the top 10 as it appears in our Maverick media poll. And then you can give me who you voted for, right? That's how this works. So number 10 is UNC. They slide into the top 10 after the win over Hopkins. Number 9 is Loyola, followed by Notre Dame. Villanova slide moves all the way up to number 7. Ohio State is number 6. And we can talk about that in a second. Denver is 5. Virginia is all the way up to number 4. Duke drops to number 3. Maryland holds tight in that number 2 spot. And Albany is our new number 1. So, Matt, first of all, two questions for you. One, I want to hear your poll. But I want you to tell us, you're our editor-in-chief here. You put this thing together each week. Give us a little background on the process of how this is done.
So in recent years, we've really expanded the pool of people who are, you know, the voters in the Maverick Media poll. It's roughly 30 people, 30 men and women who are voting in this poll. And we did that because, you know, it was getting a little insular. I thought a few years ago, it was basically just Inside the Cross and a few ESPN guys. You know, we've expanded to, you know, a lot of the blogs that are out there have votes now, more ESPN people, more people from around the country. You know, we view it as this isn't just Inside the Cross's voice. This is the voice of the sports community, you know, the voice of the media members who cover this game. So, you know, we're really proud of the poll that we put together. And we don't give a ton of direction on how people are supposed to vote. So that's why I think you see
fluctuations week to week. For instance, Yale is number 4. They lose one game and they're out of the top 10.
Yeah, it's different philosophies. You know, it's, you know, some people view it more of, you know, take more of the long view of like, you know, this team may have lost, but, you know, I still think that they're going to be relevant in May, so they're still a top 5 team in my poll. You know, other people, you know, I think you see with Quint's top 20 that he puts out every week, he's a little more reactive and is willing to fluctuate teams pretty wildly from week to week. So that's why we get such a diverse group and try to bring it together, you know, bring all the different opinions together for one definitive vote. And, you know, something we're really proud of, it used to be long hours, very late at night on Sunday and Monday morning to basically put everything into a spreadsheet and tabulate it and all this. But now it's, thank God for our web development team, it is now a form that I click a button and it tabulates.
Is there a correlation between the automation of the process and letting a lot more people vote?
No, there was a year where it was just pandemonium.
And you had to tabulate
everything.
And
I was just tabulating
yourself.
Everything. And
oh, goodness.
It was terrible. I mean, I would, you know, you work all weekend, Saturday, and there weren't as many Sunday games, I feel like, back in that era. That's kind of more of a new phenomena. And, you know, I would just be waking up as early as I physically possibly could on Mondays and just tabulating that to get it out for the Monday morning work crowd.
So, I love looking at that first thing. Reading Quint's Monday poll. And then seeing the Maverick media poll is one of my favorite things to do on Monday mornings.
Well, we hope so. You know, and Quint's poll has been awesome. You know, he's been crushing it this year.
He has been. He's been doing a really fine job.
Quint is the man. You know, it's. I wish that, and maybe one day we'll do this as a fun experiment. But I wish people could see the back and forth that, you know, I have with Quint. You know, via text message on Sunday morning or Saturday during the games when he's not at calling something. It's part hilarious, part extremely informative, and it's just all really a lot of fun, and this guy loves lacrosse.
All right, so now on to the poll. We've heard the new top 10, and people can obviously see it on InsideLacrosse.com, but give me your top 10. We'll start at number 10 and work all the way up to number 1.
Sure thing. There's going to be one team that everyone's going to notice that I don't have in this top 10.
And who is that?
That is Ohio State.
Now, I said I would mention them. They're number 6 in the poll, but they escaped Jacksonville. They were a little bit luckier than the midshipmen earlier this season, but Jacksonville is really coming on. And Ohio State is a 12-11 win. Trey LeClaire, who had been shut out the entire game, scored the last 3 goals of the game. So 2 in regulation. The second goal that he scored, it's like 2 seconds left. Heartbreaker. And then he wins it in overtime with his 3rd straight goal. Tough one for Jacksonville. But is that part of the reason why you bounced them out of the top 10?
Part of it, you know, and also I don't think their wins are that strong right now. You know, they've beat Hofstra and they've beaten Boston University. Boston University is a team that I think people expected might be, you know, in this poll from week to week, and they've kind of shifted out of it right now. So I just don't see a great win that Ohio State has had. Jacksonville is obviously a lot better than everyone thought, so this isn't to take away from them, but the fact that Ohio State wasn't able to perform in this game this weekend, I just don't see them as a top. There's nothing about them that screams top 10. Trey LeClaire is a phenomenal talent and certainly one of the better players in the country, but as a team, they just don't look like a top 10 ball club to me. I had them
right
some,
now.
I had them at, right now.
Yeah, so where do you have them sitting?
I have them at 14.
Okay. Okay, so you have them out of the top 10 at number 14. Who is your number 10 team?
Number 10 is Syracuse.
Okay. They got a big game coming up. Exciting.
I think no matter who Albany would have played in that game, they were going to win. They were that fired up for that game that, you know, they could have beaten some of the greats of all time on that field that day. They were just ready to play.
It was their day.
So I don't read too much from Syracuse being embarrassed in that game.
Okay.
And then they bounced back with an Army team that I had, I think, number 7 in last week's poll. After that, I have North Carolina. Again, a team that's been, its defense has been critiqued by us, Lex Film Room. You know, shout out to...
What does Kyle call him? Ball Watch City.
Lex Film Room, with his post, I think, got them fired up going into that Hopkins game. But they delivered and they responded, and that's what you like to see.
They're undefeated.
They are undefeated.
And they've beaten a couple good teams. So, okay.
Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
I think we saw for, you know, three quarters of this game how great this defense can be.
And you mean talking the Richmond game?
The Richmond game that they won. I have Loyola. Loyola, I think I have some question marks about their offense after seeing, I was there in person when they played Virginia. And, you know, I think their offense is, they've tweaked it and improved since then. But I think they can definitely rise. 6, I have Villanova. 5, University of Virginia, the men of Virginia. 4, Denver. 3, Duke. 2, Maryland. And number 1, Albany.
And what is about Albany that gets you so excited?
It's a confidence that they're playing with. They don't play like a, you know, air quote, mid-major program. They go in there and, you know, that was the thing I was on the radio in Albany this, on Thursday, heading into this game. And that was my biggest takeaway from their first week game against Syracuse was just, they went into the Carrier Dome and just, they played like no one's watching. They played like there's no pressure.
They
like
play loose and with great confidence.
Absolutely. And watching the highlights of the Drexel game, they just look absolutely dominant. They are just...
Well, when your face-off man wins almost every single face-off, I think he was 21 of 22. I think he missed one face-off.
If Trevor Baptiste didn't have a perfect game,
we
would all be talking about T.D. Ireland's near-perfect game. There's just something about this team is, you know... Like I said, they're playing like there's nobody watching. There's no pressure in the world. They're just having fun. And, you know, hopefully they can keep that up for a whole season and get further than this quarterfinal hump.
All right, so that's our Maverick top 10. Sideline swap, Matt. Let's talk about them. Sideline swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. You can shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off. Or snag hard-to-find college gear. Maybe some Dane Train stuff at Sideline Swap. Look it up. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com. Or simply download the iPhone app today. Sidelineswap.com. All right, so this is where we go to the listener questions, Matt. And we have one, a caller from George from Pennsylvania. Let's take George's call.
Hey, guys, this is George from Pennsylvania. I love the show. Big fan. Long time, first time. My question for you is, would you rather have a Super Bowl ring or be in the Football Hall of Fame? I know this is a lacrosse show, so you could translate it into the lacrosse world. Like, for instance, would you rather have your team win the national championship or have your school retire your jersey? Keep up the good work.
All right, so a hypothetical question there from one of our loyal callers, George from Pennsylvania. I guess his question is, like, would you rather win the Tewaratin Trophy and get your jersey retired or be in your school hall of fame, be an All-American, or would you rather win a team championship?
I mean, the answer's got to be the team championship, right?
Yeah.
That's no a clear question. That's a clear no question.
No question.
The reason, though, is I could see the, like, I mean, there's something pretty awesome about, like, going a game and being able to point, like, oh, that's me in the rafters there.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is, 20 years when you're, you know, when you're having your team reunions and stuff like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. This is my point, yeah.
Yeah, like, are you going to get everyone together and be like, hey, everyone, you know, let's look at my jersey for a few minutes?
Or can I show you, like, my Tewaratin Trophy? Like, is a really cool accolade, but I think almost any player would choose the team championship, national championship, because it's about the guys. It's about the teammates. And when you get back together in 10 years, 25 years, whatever it might be, 2 days after the championship, it doesn't matter the time frame. It's the memories and the time you spent together and the fact that you were the best in the country or in the world or whatever it might be is really what matters. And I think it's those bonds and those relationships and those memories which people cherish more than any kind of individual accolade.
Definitely. And, you know, I think of, this is a different example, but I think of Peter Baum, seeing him after he won the MLL championship with the Ohio Machine. Just seeing his excitement there. I guarantee you he would trade in that to Wharton for another one of those in college.
Oh, man, yeah. I think anybody would do that. Anyone who's played the game. But thanks again for the call, George. And just a reminder, when you're watching the games this weekend, call in with your rant, your comments, your questions even. The number is 443-595-7020. 443-595-7020. And please be sure to leave your name and where you're calling from when you make your call. All right, Matt, let's move on to a five to watch this week. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is where we start. Penn State at Penn. Penn coming off a huge win over the former number one team. Penn State coming off probably the other big upset of the weekend. What are you looking for in this game?
I'm going to go with Penn as my winner of this one. And it's kind of the same thing it's just the reaction is what I want to see. Penn has, in this very short season, has already shown to have one game where they didn't really seem to bring it. Granted, they were playing the defending national champions. And one game where they were tough as nails and you know, would have gone through a wall for Coach Mike Murphy. I want to see which team shows up here, and if they can string together two of those games in a row and then maybe build that to three. Penn State, you know, this is a very good Penn offense. I want to see what Penn State can do in kind of the settled defensive situations and if they can put up a better performance. And you know, they're going to have to try to build for their conference, get better and build for their conference championship and conference play. And hope they can be playing their best lacrosse in a few weeks when they start that Big Ten play.
Next game on my list is Colgate at Lehigh, two teams who are hoping to challenge Army and Loyola at the top of the Patriot League. Colgate was off to a great start, fell this past week.
I'm really impressed with both teams. You know, Colgate, I think, is a team that this year has shown a lot more toughness than last year and just a lot more chemistry and just whatever that intangible thing that we can't really see from an outsider's perspective, they have more of it this year than they did last year. Lehigh is a team that, you know, I was concerned a little bit about how much their attack could, you know, put the ball in the net, and they've seemed to have overcome something there. You know, Andrew Pettit has got 20 points. You know, he's a Delaware guy.
He went to my high school, Tower Hill.
Yeah, so
I always keep tabs on him.
I think that offensively they're a little bit better. So I think this is one of those games where both of these teams are probably better than we thought. You know, which one's going to continue on and which one's going to kind of go back to the pack.
Next game is Notre Dame at Maryland. First real test, I think, for Notre Dame this season. We'll see what they have two games under their belt, right? Two games?
Mm-hmm.
And they are coming down to College Park to play the Terps in a big game.
This is as big as it gets. You know, and Notre Dame's schedule is always interesting. They play so few games that, you know, every game that they do play is just
magnified
so much. Yeah. And you look at the rest of their schedule, and every team on there, maybe with the exception of Michigan, is a top 20 team. And I think there's an argument that Michigan could be in that mix by the time that they play them. I'm just wondering if, just from what I've seen at Maryland, and you know, now they have some time off, they're going to come into Notre Dame with more than a week to prepare for this game. I wonder if they're going to kind of come out with all cylinders firing, and with the experience that they have, having already played four games, might have a little bit of an edge coming into this one.
Another big game, two teams coming off with tough losses. Princeton visits Johns Hopkins.
It's gut check time for Johns Hopkins in this game. You know, I want to see discipline out of them. And Princeton, you know, I think this in many ways can be their coming out party for a lot of the young guys that they have on this team. Obviously, they played a big matchup in Virginia, but this game being on ESPNU magnifies it a lot more. So, you know, I'm wondering how the young guys that are on Princeton's roster, who I've seen in fall ball and know that they're very talented, I'm curious how they handle the bright lights of the ESPNU platform.
You know, it's funny. This game, Princeton-Hopkins, and the next game, I want to ask you about Syracuse at Virginia. They used to be the two games in our face-off classic, mm-hmm. which was the beginning of the season. We've been doing these, the D-Fly Dixie podcast. I think this is our fifth week of doing this, you know, with our season preview and then covering 4 weeks. This was the first, 10 years ago, this was sort of the first. I think it was Hopkins' first game was Princeton. And Syracuse and Virginia might have been the first game of the year for those two teams, too. And just think of all the lacrosse that's already been played, how much we've already talked about, and how different that is 10 years later. It's crazy, right?
It's crazy. And, I mean, I could go on a huge rant here that I'm not going to. But I had a very long conversation with a coach in the past week just about the season schedule that I wish we were recording it. It was a lot of off-the-record stuff, but there needs to be some creative solutions to fix the schedule in college lacrosse. I love the fact that there are the games. You know, it's having
it makes
games
February is, a lot more fun.
Better than nothing. It's good for us at Inside Lacrosse. We've had record traffic days.
Yeah,
on the weekends.
Uncle February has been really good to us. So tell us about it. Like we've set the last two weekends. We've set traffic records at InsideLacrosse.com. So in addition to all our listeners out there, we know you're on our website too. So thank you very much for supporting us and for telling friends about where to get your lacrosse news, analysis, and information, because we are doing very well.
Yeah, it's been February lacrosse, like you said, is good for us in that regard in terms of the traffic. But there's some creative solutions that I think could make the schedule a lot better that is a subject of another podcast. But Syracuse, Virginia, of the games that we've talked about, this is the one that I have the least of a strong opinion about. My gut is telling me Syracuse, but my eyes are telling me Virginia, and I know that doesn't make any sense.
Well, my thought was, I think this is Syracuse's first road game. They're getting out of the cozy confines of the dome, and they're going to play on grass. And I just feel like they're going to be a little bit slower. Virginia is very used to it. I think what Virginia does in transition and the pace that they play is a little bit more like what Albany does, and we'll give Syracuse fits. And I also think that Virginia may have found their faceoff man, and Justin Schwenk, who's been great so far this season.
Schwenk, I talked to him after the Loyola game, and he's one of those ice water in his veins kind of guy. If things go sideways earlier in that game, like they did against Loyola, I have all the confidence in the world of him performing late in the game when they need him most.
Yeah, so it'll be an interesting weekend. Some really good games, and then you can be sure that the Inside Lacrosse team, as Matt said, will be down in full force. We got guys all over the country out to most of the big games this weekend, and you and Dan Ahern are all going to head down to UVA for that one. So,
yeah, I think I'll be there. And then Saturday, not quite 100% sure of my schedule, maybe at one of these big games in Pennsylvania.
All right, Matt. It's time for the give and go. Now, this is how this works. Each week, I have some topic. Kind of surprise Dixie with it most of the time. But I give my opinion on something, usually it's top three or so, and then you get the weigh-in. So I'll tell you what we're going to talk about. I'll give you a little bit of time to think about it while I'm talking and discussing, and then you can give me yours, right?
Sounds good.
So every time I am scrolling through the cable channels, like the movie channels, I keep seeing this Eric Clapton documentary. I think it's called Eric Clapton 12 Bar Blues or something like that. It's on all the time, and every time I turn it on, I get to like the same point, no matter how, what time it is. I always seem to right in the middle where he's meeting Jimi Hendrix. You're a huge music fan. You and I talk about music all the time, especially our favorite band, Pearl Jam. I want to know who you think are the greatest guitar players of all time. And in that context, maybe your favorite guitar players. And I also want to get your opinion on like how your opinion is shaped a little bit.
Okay.
All right. So my top three favorite, in my opinion, maybe the best all time.
I bet you I can guess two of them, but.
Okay. I'll let you guess who they are.
Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's number two.
Mike McCready.
He's not on my list.
Oh, okay.
He's not on my list.
Then I'm wrong. I stand corrected.
But you got one of them. So it's Stevie Ray Vaughan, Eddie Van Halen, and Jimi Hendrix is, in my opinion, the greatest guitar player of all time. And reason I say that, those three especially, these guys were not only great guitar players, but they were very influential in creating new sounds and imitators, people who tried to imitate what they did. And that is sort of what puts them in like an upper echelon. Now, there's a lot of guys who made my honorable mention
list. Your Hall
list.
Of Very Good list.
These are all Hall of Famers. But, you know, if you can only pick three, those are my three. Now, let's hear yours, and then we can talk about some honorable mention people.
Ooh, this is tough. The greatest of all time is Jimi Hendrix. And I don't think that's
He just did crazy stuff. I mean, he was a pioneer in so many different ways, and it's just so easy for him. So easy for him.
In terms of the best modern guy right now, I would say is Gary Clark Jr.
He's a bad man.
I saw him at a festival a few years ago, and he was incredible. But if I'm going to do my favorite three, this is tough, but I'm going to go with David Gilmour. Pink Floyd is my number one of all time.
He makes a lot of top 20 lists.
Okay. You sound completely unimpressed.
Have you heard
Comfortably Numb before?
I have. It's good. It's really a great song. It's no doubt. But I'm a little surprised that made your top three. No, he's your best of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you said Jimmy's the greatest of
Jimmy's
all time.
Jimmy's the greatest. There's a difference between the greatest and
but
my...
But Gilmour is your
is
number
my
one.
Favorite.
Okay. Give me your number two and three.
You know, I'm inclined to say Mike McCready from Pearl Jam, but I'm actually going to go with Stone Gossard.
Wow.
Got to go with the rhythm guy.
Underdog.
Give the rhythm guitarist some love. Okay. He does the solo and do the evolution as well.
Oh, are we talking rhythm guitar players? Because that's a different category for me.
It's a loose list anyway.
Okay.
I'm going to give a random one for, and my perception of this is very colored because I just saw him, and this is one that's influenced by my dad. Steve Hackett, who was the guitarist in like the golden era of Genesis, you know, back in there, not their like follow you, follow me crap, but like their early prog days.
What did Mike Rutherford play? Wasn't he the guitar player?
He was a bass player.
Bass player. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like this. Hackett. But you know, I don't even have Jerry in this list. Jerry Garcia, of course.
Wow. An interesting list of
Jerry Garcia ahead of Hackett.
I wouldn't have considered Jerry Garcia.
You're stuck in this traditional blues kind of structure here. I'm going off the reservation here.
Yeah, you are a little bit.
No one has more feeling than Jerry, and Steve Hackett is just
kind of
an interesting technical.
Well, I would also put Dickie Betts and Duane Allman in there, mm-hmm. just talking about guys who could play. Obviously, Eric Clapton and Jimmy Page, and if you're talking rhythm guitar players, Pete Townsend, Keith Richards. Two of my all-time favorite bands, The Who and The Stones. But, man.
Jimmy Page is in that. I mean, it's really, you're putting me on the spot here. If I had Page is in that top five, too.
Yeah, he's amazing. I'm still, okay, so to recap. I have Stevie Ray Vaughan, Eddie Van Halen, and Jimi Hendrix. Your top three. Now, you're not saying, you're just your favorites.
My favorites.
And those are probably my favorites, too. But your favorites are Jerry Garcia,
Stone
Gossard,
and David Gilmour.
And David Gilmour from Pink Floyd. Wow. Wow. Upset. I mean, I'm so glad I brought you in for this. Because
we haven't talked about Prince.
You sort of blown
Another
my
guy?
Mind here. You've blown my mind. I had this discussion. We were talking about, I like Prince mm-hmm. a lot, but I really like Michael Jackson. I think his collection of music. So while Michael Jackson didn't really play instruments, his ability to dance and sing and just flat out kind of entertain was so innovative and so amazing. So when Prince died, I had this like Twitter poll. I was like, who was a better entertainer, Prince or Michael Jackson? And I don't know whether it was the recency of Prince's death, but Prince won. And all of my musician friends were like, it's definitely Prince. No doubt. Which actually made me go listen to some extra Prince music.
Can I share a related story here?
Yeah, sure.
So
this is what we're here for. Nobody cares about the lacrosse. They come to listen, hear us talk.
As I was saying, I was at Marquette. I hope he's cool with me sharing the story. But I was at Marquette University for a few days for an upcoming story that I'm doing.
Last week you were out there.
Last week I was there for 2.5 days. So basically saw every aspect of the program. But
you were
embedded the Marquette program. With the program. But I was at practice and Joe Amplo and I the night before were talking about Pearl Jam and how I'm a big Pearl Jam fan. And they have music going through their practice. And he had them put on Pearl Jam for me. Which was very nice of him. They played Alive, and it was at the end of a segment, so he stopped, and he had his guys at midline. He said, "All right, everyone who knows who this artist is, stand on this side. Everyone who doesn't, stand on this side." Probably 65-70% of the guys did not know who Pearl Jam was.
That hurts.
It hurts a lot. He made him run, which is good. But he was also saying about how, you know, when Prince died, there was a lot of guys who were like, I don't know who that is. I don't know why it's...
What?
Yeah. So it's...
Have you ever seen... There's like a 30 for 30 or something about when he played halftime of the Super Bowl mm-hmm. in the rain and played Purple Rain, and they didn't think he could possibly go out there and perform because of the weather conditions. I think it was Super Bowl in Miami or Tampa or something like that. And he went out and just destroyed this... Just owned it.
That's Prince. I mean, it's
he was amazing.
The kids in college now are born in the 2000s, so how can you expect them to know who they are?
Not know who Prince or Pearl Jam are? Maybe they just skipped P, like it's not on their iTunes or something.
My argument is that we're just in a weird gap where it's going to be the next group of college people whose fathers are Pearl Jam fans.
Yeah.
Right now, we're just in that weird in between. Where no one in our age range has kids that old yet, but
yeah, I know what you're saying.
It is depressing though. I was a little shocked after.
Yeah, so what we're saying is, I guess people who are in their 50s or 60s, like they were too old to know who Pearl Jam was
mm-hmm.
or is, and they missed out. So their kids who might be like 20 today don't really know who they are. Well,
there's hope for the future.
I know for one thing, in the Flynn and Kinnear houses, everyone knows who Pearl Jam is. What do you listen to with Alan? Does he listen to anything in particular?
We listened to some Soundgarden this past week, uh-huh. just because in memory of Chris Cornell, it was his passing anniversary.
I heard Soundgarden on Saturday morning, and I cranked it up a little bit.
It was
a rainy Saturday morning here in Baltimore, I cranked up some Soundgarden.
I listened to some Bad Motorfinger by Soundgarden, and... The other day I had some NoFX on. Been on a big punk kick lately, so.
We listen to a lot of Avett Brothers. So my little guy, who's 2, he's a little bit older than Alan, he just likes anything with like a beat. He doesn't really like know the words. But my daughter, who's 4, she will sing along to songs and has an incredible ability to memorize lyrics.
Hmm.
So some of the like Disney movies and things that she sees, I think she's only seen them like 2 or 3 times. And then we'll hear the song in the car or something. And she knows all the words to the songs. It blows me away. But I got her listening to finally some music that I like instead of Disney tunes. And the Avett Brothers are what she's into.
Nice.
Yeah. It's great. When she sings along, there's nothing like it. When she's singing along to the song, it's the best.
And it's great. We get to brainwash the next generation too.
Yes. Well, that's what we're supposed to do. I remember my father, we had like an old, there were 6 of us. So we had a van, and I remember like driving home from church or something. We had an 8-track player and he had like a tape of the Who. It was the Pinball Wizard Who, like 8-track. mm-hmm. and he took it out. He was like, "What is this crap?" He pulled it out of the thing, rolled down the window of our like family van, and like threw it out the window onto the side of the road. We're like, Dad, that was who? What are you doing? It's like, that's garbage. I don't want to listen to that. And I made it.
I grew up with the prog rock. That's where my Genesis yeah. stuff came from. So,
all right, I want to thank Matt Kinnear for filling in for Dixie. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, leave a rating, share it with a friend. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts. We drop a new one every single day during the season. All right, everybody, enjoy the games.